This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. Okay, guys, today I have a totally epic podcast guest. Today. She is actually one of my favorite humans in the entire world, Christina Rice. She's a holistic health coach, future NTP. She's a fellow ED warrior, and basically she's a total badass. And she is absolutely the best, and you guys are going to see why. We are going to be talking all about Christina's health journey from having an eating disorder to struggling with anxiety, depression, multiple candida overgrowths, SIBO, and other bacterial infections, to becoming a holistic health coach and being so, so passionate about helping others through nutrition and lifestyle changes. So we're also going to talk about Christina's story of overcoming her eating disorder, of overcoming anxiety and depression with real food, what it's like to have body dysmorphia and how to get out of that cycle. Then we're going to talk about how to accept that gaining weight might be the best thing for your health and all of the psychology that goes into that. And one of, I think, the most important topics that we've talked about so far is going to be how to stop the negative self-talk and body shaming. So I know this is going to be a really powerful episode and you guys are going to love it. So put your earbuds in, crank it up, and I hope you guys enjoy episode 18 with Christina Rice of Christina Rice Wellness. All right, guys, I'm really, really excited to have my good friend Christina from Christina Rice Wellness on the podcast. She's basically a badass, and we're very, very similar people. I've been on her podcast before, and we have a really similar story. So welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, anytime I get to talk to you, I get so excited. So I'm honored to be on your podcast. You're one of the only podcasts I listen to religiously. So thanks for putting out great content.
Thank you. Okay. So for anybody who doesn't know you, or maybe even for people who have been following you for a while, but they don't know like your whole story of how you got here, can you just kind of share your health journey and what brought you here to like the real food nutrition world and wanting to become an NTP?
Yeah, sure. So I'll try and give my quickie version, which is still relatively long, but I kind of, you know, struggled with digestive issues my whole life, but I didn't really realize that they were a problem. I thought it was just normal to feel like crap all the time. And in college, I mean, I was also struggling with anxiety and depression starting from middle school all the way through college. In college, it got really bad and turned into binge eating disorder. I was struggling a lot. And then I kind of just needed to pull myself out of it and kind of overnight just decided I'm going to try and become healthy. And so I started learning more about health and nutrition and, you know, looking at resources that were probably not the best resources, but at the time I thought it was quality information and really transformed my life and started to, you know, realize how much exercising and eating better could make me feel so much better. And at the same time, my digestive issues were kind of getting worse and overlapping with all of this. I went away on a trip to San Diego and got really sick. I had some froyo that had something in it, and that kind of triggered this week-long episode where I was extremely sick, could not get out of bed. I can't even give you details. It was gross. But
disaster pants is what we like to call that.
Yeah, it was out every end. It was not fun, and I thought I was going to die. I really thought I was going to die, and my family came down. I was seeing doctors, and everybody was just – my doctors would make fun of me. People would just shove me aside, tell me I'd get over it. I didn't know what was going on. Eventually, a doctor told me to go gluten-free and dairy-free completely, so I tried that, and it helped a little bit. But after that episode, my digestion was just really never the same, and I felt like I wasn't digesting anything, and nothing. Everything was hurting me to eat, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I always struggled with really bad bloat, but my bloating was just beyond anything I had ever experienced before. I could not wear pants. I basically only wore dresses.
Oh, damn.
It was really bad, and I started seeing more specialists, so I started seeing a bunch of different nutritionists and doctors, and nobody really knew what was going on, and I just kept getting given this really bad health information from these dietitians who were basically just all trying to put me on a 1200 calorie diet. And I was just thinking, okay, this isn't the issue. And after seeing how much better I felt after cleaning up my diet and removing gluten and dairy, I just started researching more about that and realizing, okay, I really just was convinced that food was going to be the answer for me and food could help heal me. And I was really fixated on that. I eventually finally got, quote, diagnosed with candida overgrowth by my acupuncturist. Amidst all the doctors and specialists and nutritionists I was seeing, nobody helped me until this acupuncturist, and she gave me a stool test and said, you have some candida going on. So she put me on a candida diet, and immediately I felt so much better. My bloating went away, and it wasn't hurting me to eat food anymore. I still had, sorry guys, this is TMI, but this whole episode, just so you know, I'm very blunt. I still struggled with constipation. That was basically my main issue my whole life, was just this chronic constipation. I'm talking like once a month, if I'm lucky, having a bowel movement. So it was pretty painful, but so that was still happening, but my stomach didn't hurt anymore and my bloating was gone. It was the first time in my life I hadn't experienced that. And I became really fixated on this idea that, you know, I just kept seeing how much food was changing how I felt. And when I eliminated the sugar and the starches and the fruit and I felt so much better, I started to just become really afraid of those foods, and like I never wanted to eat them again. And this turned into orthorexia, and I just became obsessed with making my diet as clean as possible because I thought that that would cure me. At the same time, I had gotten really into exercise, and it was making me feel a lot better, and I was seeing it change my body, and I was losing weight, and I started to become really addicted to my exercise routine and just felt like more was better and was really burning myself out, doing way too much for my body. I also was unknowingly eating way too little food for my body. I didn't, you know, I was looking up what's a healthy meal, what's a healthy amount, and just eating that. And it was way too little. I know that now, but at the time I didn't realize that. So all of this combined with my digestive issues, I was dropping a lot of weight. So I'm a small woman to begin with. I basically dropped 40, 50 pounds within the span of 3 months. I reached a weight, I was 73 pounds at my lowest. And at first I didn't really recognize what was going on. People around me were sending me really mixed signals. My family was telling me, you know, some people in my family were saying, you look really sick, what's wrong with you? Other people in my life, friends at school, were telling me how great I looked, and they wanted to know what I was doing, what my workout routine was, what I was eating. They wanted to copy me. They wanted advice. I was getting really just, I mean, I didn't know, I couldn't tell what the truth was, because when I looked in the mirror, I saw the girl I had always been. I just wasn't even seeing this weight loss, and I wasn't really, because I wasn't seeing it, I wasn't understanding how serious it was. Like,
because you weren't weighing yourself, right?
Yeah, I wasn't. But then I started to, because I started going to more and more doctors, because I just was not digesting my food and I still was in so much pain. I got rid of the candida overgrowth and then I still was having issues. So I felt like, okay, there's something else going on. So I was just seeing doctors like it was my job. I know people don't understand how much time I was, like, literally from 8 to 5, I was doing this. I dropped out of summer school at the time. When I was first figuring this out, I was working 2 internships and I ended up having to drop out of school for a quarter to take care of my health. And when I dropped out of school, I made it my job to go to the doctor. So I was seeing just a ton of different specialists to get as many opinions as I was. I was taking all these obscure, weird gut tests and health tests. And I mean, I tried everything and saw everybody. And I'm in Los Angeles and I was seeing the best of the best and, you know, got a colonoscopy and had an endoscopy, just did everything and nobody knew what to do. And I felt very pushed aside because everybody I was seeing in the Western medical system was saying, you're just anorexic, just eat more. And I was like, that is not the problem. And so I would have to bring family or friends with me to doctor's appointments to vouch for me that I was eating a lot of food. Because what the thing was the amount of food I was eating is honestly crazy. I would sit there and eat pounds of steak, a whole chicken, and like, and I didn't know where it was going because I was not having any bowel movements and I was dropping weight. I was continuing to drop weight. all this was still overlapping with my exercise addiction, eventually I was working with, I finally found a great nutritionist and therapist, and they helped me get through that and broke that. But it was still a long journey to figure out what was going on with my gut. And I eventually convinced my nutritionist, who, you know, wasn't from the paleo space or anything, but was extremely open to everything I was saying. And I would bring her in things that I would read online or in books and talk to her about science I was reading and anecdotes. And she was the only person who actually didn't tell me that I was just crazy or dumb or didn't know what I was talking about. Because a lot of doctors, you know, I would go in there with my file and these studies I found and present these different options. Have you tested me for this or that? And they would just kind of be threatened that I knew information and that I was, you know, questioning what they said. And they just, because I'm a difficult case, the instinct was just shrug me aside, you know, just shove me aside. They don't have the time to really do the in-depth work that I needed. And I hadn't really looked into integrative medicine yet. So my nutritionist was like, okay, finally, she was like, okay, let's try this paleo thing. Because at the time it was very much like, I just had to do what she said because I needed to gain back the weight. I was able to finally start gaining a little bit of weight after finding out that basically, somebody had misdiagnosed me with hypothyroidism and put me on thyroid medication that made me drop weight.
Oh my God.
So no wonder I could not put on anything. And it was a psychiatrist I saw who said, why are you on this? And I said, I don't know. I mean, my endocrinologist put me on it. They said I have hypothyroidism. And she goes, no, you don't. You need to get off that right now. So in the week I went off that, I gained 10 pounds. So I was like, thank God, right? It was a really overwhelming time. And that psychiatrist also, though, didn't believe me that I was eating a lot of food. And she tried to send me away to a treatment center for anorexia and told me I wasn't allowed to, you know, I was cut off from all of my doctors for a period of time. It was a very isolating time. And people in my life didn't believe me. I was confused. I felt very alone. It caused a lot of friction with family and friends. So it was tough. And I was going through a lot. And I was kind of out of my mind. Like, when you're at such a low weight and running on so little fuel, it really affects your cognitive function. And I was struggling and I was just weak physically. I remember just, you know, the thought of walking across a room fatigued me. You know, it was, I had no energy. So, and I was still struggling with my anxiety and depression, but eventually this nutritionist that I finally found said, okay, we can try this paleo thing. Because I had gotten up to 85 pounds, and she gave me that option, and I switched to paleo, and within a few weeks, I finally started gaining weight, and I really believe it was because that was what allowed my gut to start healing, and there was a lot going on with my gut, but that was kind of what allowed me to slowly start putting on back on the weight, and, you know, slowly but surely, I reached a higher weight. I was able to go back to school. I kept going to doctors. I finally found a functional medicine doctor and I explained my whole story to him. And he said, you're not crazy. You're smart. I think everything you're saying is right. I will test you for all of these things that you want to be tested for. I had previously been tested for SIBO after my GI was, he did not want to test me and it was, you know, like pulling teeth. And I tested negative, but my FMD tested me again for it, and I had pretty bad case. So found a bunch of other bacterial overgrowths. You know, I had really bad insulin resistance, reactive hypoglycemia. He, you know, helped me go through, like, fix that. And after that, I was okay for a bit, had candida again. Recently, finally got rid of my candida, and I'm still kind of cleaning up the last hair bits of that. But through this whole process, sorry, this is so long, I basically realized just the healing power of food and how powerful nutrition was and how this has completely transformed my life and so many other people. I mean, the stories you hear, there are a lot of illnesses and diseases out there that people say are untreatable or people have no hope. And changing someone's diet and lifestyle can get rid of so many symptoms, if not reverse illnesses. And that is a big statement to say, but I really believe that it can have a huge impact on our health. And also for me, I feel lucky that this hit me at such a young age because I think think a lot of people go through the, you know, earlier part of their lives not really caring about their health, and then it catches up to them later on. And I want people in my generation to start caring about what they're eating and putting in their body and what is in their environment and how they're living their lives, so that they realize that, first of all, they can feel so much better now, because most people just feel like crap and they don't realize it. But second of all of these things that we think are just part of aging, they're not part of aging, you know, necessarily. If you take care of yourself now, you are going to live a much longer, healthier life, you know, until you're much older. So I just want to help other people overcome these things and also be a voice in the eating disorder community, because I think a lot of people can relate to that. I, you know, my struggle, I was coming from a place of trying to fix my health and like good intentions, right? But all of the information I was being fed was BS. It was bullshit. It was low calorie. It was overtraining. But I thought that was what was healthy was. I thought that weight loss was healthy. I thought that, you know, working out so much was healthy, all these things, and they're not. And I want people to get some real solid health information and not be duped the way I was. And that is what brought me to becoming a nutritional therapy practitioner.
That is awesome. It's so crazy because, I mean, there's so many things in there that I'd like to go into, but I love that you said, like, it's so important that people start to do this when they're younger, because like you and I are in our 20s. We're just saying, like, at the day that we're recording this, like, your birthday's tomorrow and you're going to be 23. And like, if I bet a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, like, if they had gone through all of that stuff and like realized the healing power of real food by the time they are 23 and like been able to start their own business and not have to do a like quote unquote regular full-time job, they would be like, oh my God, hell yeah, I want to do that. You know, I want to have preventative healthcare through real food. Like, I don't want to have to succumb to all the things that we just assume are associated with aging. But I also think it's really interesting to think about from the other side of things. Like, some people would say, I've heard this before to me, and I'm sure people have said to you, like, do you feel like you're missing out on your 20s because like you're not going out and partying all the time, like you're not going out to brunch and like drinking alcohol or like dating all these people or like anything like that, which we're choosing to sacrifice just because of your health, because you know it's going to be better for you in the long term?
Okay, I have to be totally honest. I kind of just lost my train of thought because there was just an earthquake.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, I was just holding onto my desk. But okay, I'm recovered. It's fine. That was so crazy.
Casual okay. Earthquake in the middle of a podcast. I'm not cutting that out.
Yeah, no, please don't. I'm like cracking up that just happened because I was like, oh my God, is this happening right now? Okay, but somebody actually brought that up to me yesterday, and this is something that I struggle with, because the way I live my life right now is fun. I don't feel like I missed out. Maybe I didn't live a traditional, I didn't have a traditional college experience, but this was the thing. When I was trying to, even in high school, at the beginning of college, you know, I wasn't happy. I felt like I was just trying to force myself to do what I was supposed to do as a college student. And when I went out, I didn't like it. I wasn't enjoying it. And now it's like I have this freedom to be like, you know what I actually like is being a grandma, nerding out nutrition, staying in, cooking food, you know, going on walks outside. Like,
this is why we're friends.
Yeah, that is what is fun to me. So I don't feel like I'm missing out. I feel like I would be missing out if I was still living a life where I was trying to force myself to like things that society just tells me I'm supposed to do because I'm a certain age. That would be not fun, and that would be living a lie. And I feel so free that I can just embrace what I like to do and do it, because I have so many friends who are my age and they're living the typical 20-year-old lifestyle, right? And guess what? 99% of them are really unhappy. And for me, I mean, I've talked a lot about this, like, I have really overcome my anxiety and my depression. I thought I would always be depressed. And for me, what helped me become at the core of things, a happy person, I'm not happy 100% of the time, but no, you know, it's is. Like, what is your core being? You know, I went from feeling just like all the time, my default state was depressed and unhappy and I hated my life. And that at the root of that was because I didn't feel like I had a sense of purpose. And I felt like every day I didn't have something to wake up for that I enjoyed. And now, like, every day, I feel like I know what my purpose is and I have a sense of purpose, and the things that I'm doing every day I look forward to. I no longer am stressed out that I have to go to a party tomorrow and I have to find an outfit and I have to, you know, oh my God, I have to drink alcohol and who's going to be there, and I have to sit here and small talk with people I don't care about and just rolling through the motions. That is, you know, I think that my journey put a lot of things into perspective for me, because I thought I was, I mean, you know, they were telling me I could die at any second because my heart could fail, my organs could fail because I was at such a low weight. And that moment on, I was just like, screw this. I'm never doing anything again that I don't like, and I'm not wasting time. You know, you never know how long your life is going to be, and to waste time in any capacity, I mean, I don't have time for that. So I only want to do that I like. And I don't feel like I missed out. I feel like I'm getting a head start on all of the important things in life. And I feel blessed that I found out ahead of time.
Yeah. I mean, I bet that was really uncomfortable at first, right? Because the norm is like, oh, it's just going to be people who are eating out all the time. You're always going to happy hour. You're always going to brunch. You're always going out for drinks. Like, if you're talking about dating, it's almost weird if someone goes out, say, on like a first date and you're like, oh, I don't want to drink. And they're like, what's wrong with you? You know, I mean, they might not say it out loud, but that's definitely what they're thinking. But speaking of things that are like going outside of your comfort zone and like being uncomfortable, I want to go back to your story a little bit and talk about what it was like, not just from the physical perspective, but also from the emotional perspective of like realizing that you needed to gain weight in order to actually be healthy again. Because that was something that I experienced when I was going through like recovery and coming out of my eating disorder. Like, I think I had to gain like 30 or 40 pounds before I was able to get my menstrual cycle back. And like, that was not an easy thing to do. So can you talk about your experience there?
Yeah, this is something that I actually was just writing a blog post about, because, you know, this is something that a lot of people struggle with. And it's really, really hard, because even when you have that mental switch where you're like, screw how I look, I got to get healthy, because you know, there comes a point, you know, I remember the moment when my nutritionist was like, you know, you could die because you're at such a low weight. I just remember thinking in my head, this is my thought. I thought, I'm such an idiot. Like, am I really going to die because I want to be skinny? You know, I mean, when you really realize that, I mean, that made me feel so pathetic and stupid. And just like, do I really care that much how, like, what I look like? And this is the thing, it's like my weight was never my motivating factor, but it's always there. I think just as a woman in today's society, you're always conscious of your weight, you know, and you're told like being skinnier is better. And then when I have that mental switch, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do whatever I need to do to gain weight. I don't give a shit, honestly, at this point. But then even as you're gaining weight, it's a mind game, you know, because the body dysmorphia was very real. I remember gaining weight, and I was gaining weight, and I would tell people that I was really excited about it, but I would look in the mirror and I was uncomfortable. And I remember taking pictures and thinking, oh my gosh, I look chubby in that picture. I'm chubby now. And that's what I thought at the time. And I look back at those photos now, and I was still so underweight. And it just kind of shows me, now it's giving me such a different perspective of just like, I had no sense of what I looked like. You know, my body image had become so skewed. But what I had to do was really be honest with myself about these feelings I was having and do everything I could to detach myself from the way I looked. So one thing that I really stopped doing was taking pictures of myself. I grew up just, I love to take pictures all the time. This is what we used to do for fun. Like in middle school and high school, we would just sit around and take pictures of ourselves. We're so vain, right? So I stopped taking pictures of myself, and I stopped looking at pictures of myself. I stopped going on Facebook. I stopped following this is kind of what got me, I switched over to food. I stopped following people who I was looking at their bodies, you know, and I stopped looking at myself in the mirror so much. I had to really, really distract myself. And anytime I had a feeling of doubt about what I was doing in terms of gaining weight, I would just have to like tell my, I have to do a lot of self-talk, and I told myself, okay, this is basically your prescription to heal, to get better. Like remembering what my goal was, I would write out my goal, you know, I want to get healthy. I want to reach a weight where I'm healthy and I'm not struggling anymore. And I would put tangible things. I want to not feel cold all the time. I want my hair to stop falling out. I want to get my period back. I want it to stop hurting when I sit down. I want to, you know, be able to hug someone without being nervous that they're going to be freaked out that I'm so thin. All of these things, you know, being really blunt and honest about what my symptoms were and asking myself, is this really worth it? And I think just like learning to detach my worth from the way I looked and spending time with people. I had to change a lot of the relationships in my life. So I dropped a lot of friends because I realized that they were just talking about things or doing things that were triggering for me or making me self-conscious about myself. And I switched my friends and lost a lot. And I did a lot of introspection and was trying to distract myself and learn about different things and go out. And I think that I just had to always tell myself, like, this is the analogy I always give to people and clients. I'll say, you know, if a doctor gave you cold medicine that tasted like crap, but you had to take it to get rid of your cold, like you would just down it, right? You just plug your nose and down it. It's the same thing with eating the food, right? But how lucky are you that your prescription can taste good, you know? And that's what I would tell myself and kind of switch that self-talk. But it is hard. It is not easy to gain weight, but it's kind of like you got to just like head down, blinders on, just push through, forge through, and just trust that at the end of it, it's going to be so much, so worth it. And having people in your life who are there supporting you and like social proof, I guess, that you are not your body. Like people who are my friends through every weight and size, goes to show that people don't love me because I'm a certain weight. They love me because of my personality. That those reminders helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I remember when I was in the process of recovery and I had like started to gain weight. So I was probably like 20 pounds over my very lowest weight. And I was going to see some of my friends from college and I was like afraid to see them because I was like, oh my God, what are they going to think of me now that I've gained weight? And that was like a really, really hard thing for me to do. And like, you know, even though you know that you're on the right path of recovery and gaining weight is the healthy thing to do, like it's so hard to stop the negative self-talk and the body shaming and all that kind of stuff. So whether it was for you or like, what do you do when you're working with clients and like that, they're just stuck in that cycle of negative self-talk and body shaming for themselves?
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you are stuck in that, you have to sit down. I think, okay, I'm a huge believer in journaling. I think it's so powerful to write to yourself and see it on a page. And you have to write out all of these traits, you know, that like what defines you, figuring out what defines you and what you love and what motivates you. And I also think sometimes looking at it from another perspective. So think about the women in your life, or maybe who aren't in your life, but women who you admire or you want to be friends with or you are friends with, and write these things out. Why do you like them? What do you love about them? And figuring out what you admire in them. And that can kind of help you realize that if your answer is the way they look, then that tells you something about yourself, right? But most of the time, it's not. It's some other trait. It's because they are really, really smart. Maybe they're super witty and funny. Maybe they are just really kind and loving. Maybe they're adventurous and they put you out of their comfort zone. You know, all of these different things. And realizing, okay, I don't judge other people on the way they look. So why am I judging myself, you know? And also this exercise with the journaling where, you know, you write out everything you're thinking and feeling, even if it's this negative talk, this negative self-shame, you write out everything that's in your head, you know, accept that you're having these thoughts and read it back and read it from the perspective of, this is a friend writing this to me. What would I tell her? What would I say to her? you know, and, you know, pointing out the things you love about yourself and finding, you know, things that you don't, maybe you don't think you like, and turning that into a positive. So a common one with clients and women in general and me, when you gain weight back, you usually first gain it. I mean, you usually gain it in your stomach. Let's be honest. It's the belly weight gain. And that's really hard for people to swallow. For me, I remember just fixating on it, and I had to turn my self-talk, and, you know, I can look at this and I can say, I'm getting fat. My stomach is fat. I have a pooch. Or I can say, okay, maybe I have a pooch. But that pooch is going to tell my body that it's safe and it's okay. And this pooch is eventually going to tell my body that I can have a period and I'm safe enough to be fertile. And this will allow me to have children one day. And, you know, like switching it. So what positive things can it do for you? Or maybe you think your legs are too big. You know, those legs hold you up. They make you strong. They let you walk. They let you run. You know, you could be sitting in a wheelchair, not able to use your legs, you know? So who, like, what is beautiful about them? That's, we need to flip what we think of as beautiful and realize that our bodies are just vessels and they're not what defines us. And it doesn't make sense for us all to fit a certain shape or size. You know, we're all very different. And I think a lot of this, it's deep emotional work, honestly. And I think talking with somebody and getting to the root of this, because a lot of times we're focusing on the way we look or focusing on our food or exercise because we're avoiding something else, right? There's something else going on. What happened to us when we were younger? Who are we looking for approval from? Why are we looking for approval from them? At what weight, at what body shape is what's going to be good enough for you? Like, let's answer that honestly, because I'll tell you my answer. I didn't know when I really realized, I mean, I don't know what number is low enough. I mean, are you just going to keep going until you wither away to zero?
Yeah, it was never low enough. Whenever you're in that situation, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, you know, I mean, how many people have you met when they're like, oh, when I get to this goal weight, that's like, you know, 10 or 20 pounds under what they really should be weighing, I'm going to be happy at that weight. And then they get there and they're like not happy at all because they've had to over-exercise and restrict their food and like not go out, not see their friends, all this stuff. It's like you're not actually happy when you get there. And even when you get there, you're not going to be satisfied. So you're just going to, what, keep going until you wither away to nothing? Like,
exactly. And people who have these goal weights, you know, it kind of goes one of two ways. So sometimes somebody will tell me they have a goal weight and I'll say, okay, let's just thought experiment right now. Let's say right tomorrow you wake up and you're that weight. Then what? What's going to change in your life? Realistically, what's going to be different? You know? And I think for me, experiencing all of these different weights has been really telling to me, seeing how people treated me differently. You know, I was at my goal weight for a period of time. Guess what? I was not happy. I was still not happy. I am heavier than I like ever have been, and I'm happier than I ever have been right now, you know. Or with the goal weight, oftentimes some people will set these unrealistic goals, and it's a subconscious thing where they know that they can never reach it, and it's just a distraction from something else. Because if you set a goal that's unrealistic, I mean, that's going to keep you busy from focusing on the other things in your life that you should address that you don't know how to, right? Because you're just busy chasing this unattainable goal. And let's just ditch that and let's just work on the real stuff. Let's get to the root of it and stop distracting ourselves, because that is what's going to make you much, much happier.
Yeah, because a lot of the time, I mean, I'm sure you've had this too, when you're working with clients or like even with friends, you can see, you know, people that are attracted to, whether it's a goal weight or whether it's using exercise or food as a control mechanism, it's because they don't feel like they have control in some other aspect of their life. So it's like, mm-hmm. like you were saying before, like, who didn't love you? Like, why do you feel like you need this approval? Like, why do you feel like you need to go to the gym and have your friends say like, oh my God, you look really good in those shorts today? Like, which is a really nice compliment. But for some people, it's just fuel to the fire that they don't need, because it just continues them on these super unhealthy habits. So actually, on that topic, since we're talking about negative self-talk and body shaming and then also recovery, like, how a lot of people that I worked with or have worked with, and a lot of people I'm sure that listen to this podcast, they're in, you know, some stage of recovery. They're starting to talk better to themselves. They're starting to cut out all of the like six pack abs bullshit on Instagram. Like they're on a recovery journey to start talking better to themselves. But then sometimes you are surrounded with people who maybe not knowingly, or maybe knowingly, can be very triggering to you. Or they're saying negative things, not maybe negative things, but just fueling other people's insecurities. Like, oh, like you look really lean today. Or like, oh my God, you know, like something like that. Like what advice can you give to people who are trying to better themselves and then they're encountering these other people who can be triggering for them?
Yeah. So I think it kind of depends on the situation and the type of person you are. So I'll give an example. I just want you to know, if anybody's listening and they are struggling with this, just so you know, like, I think it helps just to understand that we all deal with this, okay? So don't feel like you're alone when these people say these insensitive comments. And people, sometimes they do it because they are insecure themselves, and sometimes they just don't even realize they're doing it because this has become so ingrained in our culture to talk like this and to have these sorts of thoughts. But, I mean, recently, over Christmas, I was around my family and I got told multiple times I had gotten fat. And that was very interesting to me. And I just thought, okay, I'm not sure how to respond to this. And I had a few people say, a few people said, oh, you've gotten a little fat. Or I had a few people say, you've gotten chubbier. And I had some people say, you look like you put on a lot of weight. You look a little chubby now. You look so much better. They say, tell me, I look, but I'm just confused. But you know what I think the most powerful thing to say to somebody in that situation is? If you're going to respond, say, you know what? I would really appreciate it if you didn't make comments about my body, negative or positive, because there's so much more to me than my body. Like, if you say something like that straight up to somebody, I mean, they'll be damn, like, mic drop. They don't even know what the hell to say.
Drop like, the mic and leave.
That puts them in a place. Yeah, like, so if you can't say something like that, I would, and that's, you know, obviously if it's somebody who's like a stranger, you probably might, you know, it depends on the person. Not everybody would feel comfortable saying that to. Otherwise, I would just kind of let it roll off your shoulder. But later on, like, let's think about that. And what helps me deal with that is communicating that with friends or you know, a therapist if you see someone, or a health coach, or journaling about it. Just communicating it, because if that statement is said to you and you just let it ferment in there, it's going to be in the back of your head. You got to get it out. You got to address it. So this person said this to me, and you know, maybe try to come up with why they might have said that and why it doesn't matter what they said. You know, people put their shit onto everybody else. They always do that.
It's always a projection of their own insecurities.
Yeah. And whether it's about the weight or it's, why are you eating that? You know, why can't you eat that? It's about the food or the exercise. What are you doing? You know, we have to understand that it's just coming from their own stuff. And it's oftentimes our instincts to put it on ourselves and to feel like it's us. It's us, but guess what? It's usually not you, it's them. And hopefully that's only happening to you every once in a while. If that happens to you often, then I would look at who you're surrounding yourself with and not surround yourself with those people, because I don't want to be around anybody regularly by choice who makes comments like that. If you are around somebody regularly who is like that and it's not by choice, maybe you have coworkers that make statements like that, honestly, I mean
punch them in the face.
Yeah, do that. And I would pull them aside, you know, and say something. Say, you know, I really don't see the need for you to make comments about my body or the food I eat. If you want to have that kind of self-talk towards yourself, you know, I can't do anything about that, but please don't project that onto me. I mean, I honestly think that you need to stand up for yourself. Don't let people walk all over you. That's my advice.
Truth bomb. Yeah. So one of my favorite articles that you've ever written is, Do We All Have Body Dysmorphia? And it's talking about how as we were saying before, like there are all these mixed signals in the media, and like when you're young and just figuring out all this stuff, like you don't know what to believe or what is right. So can you talk a little bit more about that article and like why you wanted to write it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's, you know, I see so many incredible women every day who are really struggling, and they're sitting there in front of me, and they're beautiful, and they are telling me that they feel fat. And I just feel like you don't even understand, or what I was describing before about how when I was gaining weight and I thought I was getting so chubby, and I look back now and I thought, oh my gosh, I was not. And now, I mean, I'm very detached from what I see in the mirror because I don't trust anything I see in the mirror because I've experienced this firsthand, and I think most people don't realize the level of body dysmorphia they have. And all of these images that we're seeing all around us are not reality, okay? All of these women that we're seeing in men in magazines are photoshopped, or these actors or actresses, you know, are they at a healthy weight? These professional athletes, are they actually healthy, or are they just really good at their sport? All these people are making sacrifices for their profession, you know, whether that means modeling and getting to such a low weight that you lose your fertility in your period and you have all these other health issues, and later down the line you start losing your hair and your teeth and God knows what else. Your thyroid's messed up, you know, or even as an actor or actress, same thing, putting your body under extreme conditions, or, you know, professional athletes with the same thing, or how is their body going to feel 10 years from now? Are they going to have their periods, you know, later on? We don't know behind the scenes, like, what that person's state of health truly is. And we need to keep that in mind when we're looking at these images. And I think also, even with social media now, like, everybody is face tuning and fixing their bodies, adjusting their bodies. And it's interesting for me because, so I live in Los Angeles, and a lot of my clients compare themselves to these bloggers or social media stars they see. And every single time, everybody has this dream of coming to LA, right? And they want to see everybody. And every time they come to LA, I say, so what did you think? How was it? And they go, okay, I'm really glad I went out there because people do not look like what they look like online. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And it's sad to me that people, you kind of have to see it to believe it. But I wish they didn't have to, because not everybody can experience that. But I wish everybody just learned to realize that these images they're seeing are not necessarily true, even when it comes to yourself. So even it's like, how many of us, we take a picture and we look at it and we go, oh my God, I look so bad, right? And, but then you look back weeks later, days later, months later, years later, and you think, damn, I looked pretty good. But how come at the time I thought I looked so bad? We are our own worst critics. We are comparing ourselves to these unrealistic ideals that are not real. You know, I talk to some of my friends are photographers, and they're like, I literally edit these women's bodies for a living. I make them slimmer. You know, these are just ridiculous standards that we have for ourselves. And I just wish more people understood that, so we learn to stop comparing ourselves to these unrealistic images, whether that be of ourselves or other women.
Yeah, and I know you've talked about this a little bit before, like the truth behind Instagram, like that it's unless you're actively putting yourself out there as like a real person, which you can tell like on stories, or like if someone's not doctoring up their photographs, which is like us and other people that are like real in the wellness space. But for a lot of these like famous Instagrammers or celebrities or whatever, like it's just a highlight reel of everything they're doing that's totally photoshopped. And like, I think it's become so hard in like since social media started getting super popular that now we're seeing like more anxiety and depression than ever before. I don't know if we're seeing more eating disorders than ever before, or maybe we're just more aware of it. But yeah, I mean, like life is not just a highlight reel of the most perfect moments, but that's what you're showing on Instagram. So it really helps to keep that in mind when you're trying to get away from all these toxic body ideals that are not going to make you any healthier, because Instagram just makes it seem like, oh, everyone's life is so perfect. Like, I'm going from this like perfectly manicured cafe with like a turmeric latte to like going to my spin class and like having six pack abs and then going to eat the most perfectly like made up breakfast. And like, sometimes I am totally guilty of that because I'm a food photographer, right? So like, my purpose in making food photos is to make them look good so people want to eat them. But then I'll show people the other side of like, this is what it actually looks like when I eat. And like, most of the time I'm not wearing any makeup and I'm wearing workout clothes and like, I don't dress up all the time. People are like, whoa, that's what it really looks like when you eat. I'm like, yeah, do you think I actually take 20 minutes before I eat every single meal to like make a perfect avocado rose and like do all this perfect shit? I'm like, no, that is not real life. Like, that, this is the difference between like the shit you're seeing on Instagram and the shit that is real life.
Yeah, I know. And I wish people understood, like, they're comparing themselves to people who literally their job is to make it look good. If you are a regular, if you're a person with a regular 9-to-5 job and like life and friends and you're not living on Instagram, you do not have time to make every meal look beautiful, okay? Also, I just need to put out there that the prettiness, poor word, whatever, the prettiness of your meal does not correlate to its deliciousness. No. I just had to put that out there. My most delicious meals are usually my ugliest. But I also think a really helpful concrete example of this is like, whether or not you're somebody who edits your pictures, like, think about any picture you take, anyone. Who do you know who literally just takes one picture? You, if you're taking a selfie, you take like 50, right? Whether or not you're posting on Instagram. If you're taking a picture with a group of friends or going out, you guys take like a bunch of them. You're not just taking one. You're taking a ton, and then you scroll through and you try and find the best one because there's one that has the best angle or the best lighting or you like the way you look. But in real life, you are the same person in every single picture, right? So whether or not somebody's editing their pictures, that doesn't necessarily equate to what is going on in real life. That just, it's like proof that a photo doesn't show what it's really like, right? Because how come you can be not, you know, one person not changing in real life and then take 15 pictures in a row and they all look slightly different and you notice the small nuances, right?
But nobody else does.
Yeah. So I think that's just a really kind of good example. I mean, you know, I mean, what if I take a selfie? I do not just take one. I'm sorry.
No one does.
You got to find the right one, right? Right? But I look the same in real life all the time. So I think that just goes to show. But I just wish people realize that with the food stuff, it's not real. And now I get so pissed off. All these bloggers post things and they don't eat them. And I'm just like, are you serious? It's really heartbreaking to me because I remember, had I not started working for a blogger and then meeting all these other bloggers and started learning about the behind the scenes, I would have still bought into all this and believed everything I saw was true. Now it's like I scroll through my feed and I almost forget that everybody else doesn't realize how much of it is not true. You know, I see somebody say, oh, I had this for breakfast, and I think, no, you didn't. You know, I know, and I'm just used to it. But, you know, I have clients or people, women in my program, and they're saying, oh my gosh, did you see what so-and-so ate? And I just, for a second, I'm like, wait, what do you mean? I'm like, of course I'm like, what do you mean? She didn't eat that. And they go, but she posted it. And I go, oh, but just because she said she did doesn't mean she did. Like, I know her. She didn't. You know?
Yeah. So wait, that's so really sad. For people who don't know, like, what is going on behind the scenes, like, aside from some people just not eating what they post, like, talk more about that.
Okay. So, I mean, this is not – I'm making generalizations, and I'm talking really a lot about – there's a certain demographic that's here in Los Angeles and on the West Coast. I find that the people who are not liars tend to be in other states.
Sometimes.
But, I mean, there's definitely a type, okay. But there is a large number of bloggers who, you know, will go to an ice cream shop and buy some ice cream, post it, balance, and then throw it away. Don't take a bite. I've seen people literally take a bite of something for their story and then spit it out.
Oh Oh my God.
You know, stuff like that. They say, you know, people post their what they eat in a day or their exercise routines, and it's absolutely not what they're doing at all. They're just posting what they think people want to see, or what they think is a good exercise routine, or what they think is the normal amount of food. You know, what they just are putting out there what they want other people to believe in. It's really sad to me how many people are struggling with eating disorders still and are projecting their lives as if they are not struggling at all. Being information, honestly, it's really, really disheartening. And I just wish more people could see the behind the scenes of all the lies.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, guys, like, it's not that everyone does this, right?
No,
I
not everybody
mean,
does this at all,
it's
but it
primarily like
exists.
the really big, really influential, I guess, Instagrammers who it's kind of like, it kind of seems like their life is too perfect to be true. And like, maybe it's not all of them, but we definitely know. I mean, you can kind of guess for some of them.
Yeah. I'm sorry. And also, it's just like, use your own common sense. Like, any recommendation somebody gives you, look up the ingredients for yourself. Like, don't just take the word of any blogger as the word of God and they are the ultimate right person. You are allowed to disagree with people. So many people do this thing. It's so annoying. They go, "You guys, I got this new product. The ingredients are amazing. They're so clean." And they read the ingredients and they'll like literally read out ingredients that are not amazing and not clean, and they just kind of gloss over it like nothing's wrong. But because they're packaging it as, "You guys, these ingredients are so clean," you know, people believe it and they go, I thought that was healthy. So and so said it's healthy." And I'm like, "No, it's not." You know, if you're eating all of these fillers and additives and sugar every day, that's going to have consequences for you down the line. So I just wish people would realize that, or I get, you know, you have to realize also this is a business for a lot of people. So sometimes you have to, well, you don't have to. They feel like they have to sell their souls to make enough money. And sometimes they'll promote products that are just BS, or they're just being inauthentic and they're not telling you when they're being sponsored, which I feel like if you are lying about when you're sponsored, I'm like, why are you lying? Which is really sad. But you know, the one that I feel like I keep talking about this, but it just really grinds my gears, is that goddamn Panera clean sauce.
Oh my
Did you
God,
see
I
that?
know. Yeah.
100% sauce. And I was like, oh, this is not clean. And I swear to God, so many bloggers are posting about it. Just, and I know consumers just see this and their favorite blogger is promoting it. It's labeled 100% clean, so they just trust it and they go buy it and they don't even look at the ingredients themselves. All I can tell you is trust no one and read the ingredients yourself. Just to be
Yes,
blunt.
being so real. I love it. Oh my God. Okay, speaking of being super real, so you recently rebranded from Addicted to
Did.
Lovely and at your Actually Adultish podcast to Christina Rice Wellness, and Wellness Realness is your new podcast. So what was the motivation behind that?
I have been like honestly really struggling with the whole name thing for a long time. So I had my blog Addicted to Lovely, and as my whole health journey went on, I mean, I just kind of like stuck with it. That was always my blog, and you know, it evolved as I evolved. And I started my podcast, and it started off kind of being about college life, but I mean, I changed and I graduated and I got really into health and wellness, and I went from having two other co-hosts to just being me. And I just kind of felt disconnected from the names for a while. And I knew that, you know, I was planning on launching my nutrition website separately, ChristinaRiceWellness.com, to just be like an informational nutrition services website for when I finished my NTP program and, you know, just for coaching and stuff like that. And I was thinking about this and I'm just getting overwhelmed thinking, oh my God, I have four brands. I have four websites, and I already get really overwhelmed. And I know a lot of people didn't realize that it was me, the same person on all these different things. So because I also started another podcast, Straight Up Paleo, with my co-host Kara. So I'm like, okay, I have Straight Up Paleo, I have Actually Adultish, I have Addicted to Lovely, and I'm gonna have Christina Rice Wellness. My brain's about to combust.
Your life's
And
about to
I just,
combust.
yeah. And I was, you know, I was going back and forth. I was thinking, okay, should I I wanted to change the podcast name. I was like, I need to change at least one thing so I have at least one less thing, but nothing sounded good. And I felt this emotional tie to the names, you know, like they're a part of me. And I was like, people know me as Addicted to Lovely. Mm-hmm. Like everybody knows me as that. Like, it's so sad. And I had been toying with it back and forth, for almost a year. And then I don't really know what happened. I was just like, I cannot do this anymore. I just want it all on one website. And I thought, okay, I'm just putting my blog onto this new website. It's going to be sad to see Addicted to Lovely go, but also, real talk, I mean, I want something that has longevity, and I'm not going to be 45 writing on a website called addictedtolovely.com. Let's be real. You know, like, I just not. Like, this has got to go. So it's been, I'd rather do it sooner rather than later and have it all on one website. And also, I was getting really frustrated because I'm super proud of my blog, right? And I write a lot of things that I love, but I am not a full-time blogger. That is not what I make my income off of. Mm-hmm. At all. And so I took a lot of pride in my blogging, but because I just had a blog on, it was my blog, people thought I'm just a full-time blogger and that's all I do. And that's not true at all. Like, blogging is like my side thing for fun.
Yeah, same.
But that is not my main source of income. And I think that putting it all on one website helps people to understand, this is my website. My main job is that I am a nutritional therapy practitioner, a holistic health coach, right? And I have a blog that I write on, but that is not what I make my money off of. So I was just trying to differentiate myself, because I get really frustrated when I'm getting so many messages and comments and emails from people who just want free advice. And I go, okay, you can't just send me your lifelong story and say, help me. I'm like, you can set up a session with me. You can pay like the rest of my paying clients, right? And they're like, well, you're just a blogger. And I, no, sorry, it's my job, you know.
I'm like exploding over here. Yeah. I get so many emails that are, oh my God, I get so many emails that literally the subject line is just, help me. I'm like,
exactly.
Do you need 911? Like, what? Like, yeah. Like, please, guys, don't send me an email with the subject line, help me. I'm sure I'm going to get some now. But like,
yeah,
that's the thing is like, so we both work in the nutrition field, like NTP nutritionist, whatever you are, like, this is our job. This is how we make money. Like, it's really frustrating that people don't value that time, because like, I shouldn't spend an hour responding to your email about your entire life. Like, yes, I would love to do that, but my priority is my clients who are paying me, because I am invested in their case. I know so much more about them than I do about you. And like, no offense, but if you want to pay me for my time, I will 100% give all of my effort into helping you do whatever you need to do. But I don't have the time to like sit down for 5 hours and respond to the like 100 reader emails that I have right now. Like, I promise I'll try and get to them. But if I don't respond, it's not because I don't like you.
Exactly. And people don't understand that. And I realize that because other people were treating me as just, I was a blogger and they felt entitled to my time, I was falling into that trap. So I was spending 40, 50 hours a week working on things that were making me no money. Mm-hmm. That I was acting like I was a full-time blogger, even though no one was paying me to be. You know, I was spending, there was a time where I was blogging 5 days a week. And that is, people don't understand how much time and energy goes into blog posting. You know, I went down to three, I was at 3 days a week for a while. And now I'm like, why am I killing myself trying to put out so many blog posts? I put out 2 podcasts a week. I'm very active on social media. I'm always on Instagram. I'm doing stories. I respond to my DMs. I respond to all my comments. And I'm looking at all these full-time bloggers who are getting paid to do this who aren't doing that. There are full-time bloggers, right? That's their full-time job. And they write 1 post a month, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm sitting here killing myself doing all these things that people are making me feel like I have to do. But wait, this isn't even my job. You know, so like, as soon as I start treating myself as, okay, no, these are my boundaries, these are my priorities, like, other people kind of have to be trained to understand that as well. And I think we live in an age, unfortunately, I mean, I could go off about this, people just really entitled to instant gratification, instant, they want everybody else's time and knowledge, and they don't want to pay for anything. People do not want to pay for anything. And that's really sad to me. Guess what? If you want quality advice, you got to pay for it. I learned that the hard way. It my own health journey, it's like I was there. I used to read every single thing I could find. I used to read everybody's blogs, try and copy what they were doing with their health, and that screwed up my health big time. And the only time I finally started getting results with my health and my life and my mental health was when I paid somebody to focus on me as an individual. Instead of guessing and checking, I had somebody who was very smart tell me, this is what you need to do. Don't worry about anybody else. Just do this. And I finally was able to overcome my health challenges because of that. So to me, like, I would rather pay X amount of dollars, 500 hours of random searching on the internet and desperately asking bloggers for advice, you know, just to spend 1 hour with a professional who will tell me exactly what to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have to invest in yourself, whether it's self-care, mm-hmm. whether it's seeing a nutritionist, like a naturopathic doctor, or even just like getting a massage every once in a while. Like, what, are you going to massage yourself? Like, yeah, I mean, a foam roller or a lacrosse ball is great, but like there has to be something to set – English is hard. There's something mm-hmm. to be said for like actually going to get a massage that you pay for, and afterwards you're just like, oh my God, I feel so much better. Like, it's the same thing with going to see a practitioner. Like, you're never going to know exactly what it is that's going on because everyone's experience, everyone's health journey is like so different. So until you get someone that's going to do like an individualized intake with a health history and like examining all these things, like just invest in it. It's going to be worth it, yeah. I promise.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think that's a really good parallel. Or like getting your nails done. You know, it's like if you want it done right, usually we'll just pay for a salon. You know, you'll go like, yeah, I could pay my nails, but it's not going to look as good as if I go in there and get them to clean it up, right?
Yeah.
So thinking about it like that, or like, would you go to a doctor? You know, maybe you have a friend who's a family friend who's a doctor. Would you go up to him and be like, these are all my symptoms. Can you please treat me right now while you're at a dinner party? No, you would never do that, you know, but people don't understand those lines anymore, unfortunately.
Oh my God.
So they got to learn.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know you probably have a lot of other stuff to do today with all your clients coming up. I know you said before, but before I let you go, I love to ask people like a really fun question at the end. So what is your favorite indulgence English right now, whether it's like food, self-care, or like something that you bought for yourself or treated yourself with?
Well, can I say Desperate Housewives?
Yeah.
Literally, I'm so deep into a Desperate Housewives hole. Like, I feel like a psychopath because all I can do, like, every day I'm just like, I just need to like finish this series, and I'm so close. I like, all I've been doing is watching Desperate Housewives, and I'm almost done with all 8 seasons. I'm on my last season, and that is like my total guilty pleasure.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
That I'm digging.
I love it. Yeah, that.
So there we go. What's yours?
This isn't really a guilty pleasure, but I've just been like really stressed out and overwhelmed lately, so I've been listening to the Harry Potter books on Audible with Jim Dale, and it's just like, it's so relaxing to me, but then I like get so sucked in that I can't get anything else done. Like, every time I have a free second, whether I'm like making recipes or like walking the dog, or like the second I wake up in the morning when I'm like doing my makeup and getting ready, I'm like, oh my God, I gotta listen to like what happens next. Even though I know, like, I've read the series so many times, I know exactly what's gonna happen, but it's been great. I love it.
It's different every time. That series will never get old, and you can like experience it in so many different formats, whether that be Audible or reading or in the movies. So
embarrassing.
I totally respect that.
I was going to say books on tape. God, so old. Oh my God.
Oh my God. What's a tape? No,
right.
I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
I love that.
Oh my God. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast. Please tell people where they can find you so they can go check out all of your amazing stuff.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure. If you want to find me, you can find me at ChristinaRiceWellness.com. You can find me on Instagram at ChristinaRiceWellness. My two podcasts are both on iTunes. One is called Wellness Realness. Dana has been on that. And the other podcast is called Straight Up Paleo. So you can check me out there.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.